This is WGNS Action Line. Action Line. Talking with Rutherford County newsmakers for 78 years.
Since 1947.
It's how my day begins.
It's how this day begins.
This is WGNS Action Line. Now your host, Scott Walker.
Brandon Bass is in studio with us today, attorney with John Day Legal, or the law firm of John Day. How are you?
I don't have a complaint in the world. Thank you for asking.
So any big interesting things within the world of law that we should know about? Any changes? Any big things coming?
There's always new things coming. You know, when we deal with lawsuits, we're looking at what's changing in the legislature when they're writing up new laws, whether it's to change when you can file a lawsuit, to change what you can file a lawsuit for. The courts are looking into advanced situations. There's a big one brewing up at the Supreme Court now over who should pay for interest on cases. So we're always monitoring new stuff, but nothing that affects everybody except people in the specific circumstances.
Now, when you say interest on cases, are you talking like if somebody has a slip and fall accident, for example, and the case takes 3 years to get to trial, 4 years to get to trial, whatever that is, you're talking about the interest in between the filing of that up to the decision day, if they...
Exactly. And it's Tennessee's been sort of up in the air on when interest before the judgment, before the trial, can be applied to the person who caused the harm. For my take, boy, it's a great incentive to folks, especially with inflation and interest rates the way they are today, to, if you're the one who might owe the money, delay.
Yeah.
And say, well, if the longer we can stretch this out, the more I'm collecting that interest before I have to pay it out. And if you're on the injured side, if you're the victim, you want it over as soon as possible. You want to get the money, but all those delays, you haven't had it. And the Supreme Court's looking at circumstances where maybe the person who caused the harm or who refused to pay the money should also include with that interest for the time between injury and trial.
And the interest rate, who in the world decides on what that interest rate should be?
It would be the judge in the case. The law gives them a limit. I think it's 10% maximum, but then it's up to the judge to decide what makes sense under the circumstances, not just by what's the current interest rate or what's it been over the 2 or 3 years, like you said, that they've been waiting, but also what have they done to sort of to make them responsible. The person who hasn't paid yet, who owes the interest, what did they do to make it take 2, 3, 4, 5 years or whatever, how much delay? Maybe the judge should tick the number up towards that 10% mark or lower it if they've been on the other side and trying to get the case over with as soon as possible.
And now, the tough part about this in like a slip and fall case, if you have some injured party, and let's say it's a big company that somehow caused that injury, you've got the issue of this patient who's suing. You know, they're up against medical bills, and in some cases, their own personal health insurance is not covering it, or they're questioning covering it because they're saying, well, this happened because of XYZ. Their insurance needs to pay for your medical bills. And that's a big stumbling block if somebody doesn't have the money to outright pay for the medical costs leading up to trial.
Well, and especially if they're having to make decisions about whether to even get medical care, because they might have to fund the money. You know, for an emergency situation where it's this patient's not going to make it out of the ER unless they get surgery, the ER is going to give them surgery. The law requires it regardless of whether they can pay. But if somebody's hurting every single day and the doctor says the only solution is surgery, but it's going to cost you $30,000 up front before we can get it scheduled, a lot of folks don't have $30,000 sitting in a bank account waiting to pay out. So they got to wait for that trial to even occur, or for the person who caused it, the company or whoever, to agree to pay the claim, mm-hmm. to pay the losses, before they can even schedule the surgery. So it's why, you know, from my standpoint, interest makes sense, a disincentive against delay. and especially where the judge has the power. The flip I mentioned, if the person who owes it, the company or whoever owes the money, has dragged things out, that's a reason for the judge to uptick the interest rate towards the higher level.
Yeah.
But frankly, if the person who's hurt has dragged it out, if they didn't care enough, if they skipped out on a whole lot of time to go because they wanted to take a trip to Europe despite being hurt, you know, that's more power to them, that's fine. But no, you're not getting a lot of interest if you didn't do everything in your power to close this file out as soon as possible. So it just makes sense. And frankly, it makes sense. It makes sense to get people out of the court system as soon as possible. You know, to have an interest rate that the person who's receiving money has an incentive to get it over with as soon as possible, because the judge will tag interest on if they've done it. And the person who might owe it is looking at additional interest and would like to close it out as soon as possible.
Now, the other downside to this, you know, waiting period to get to the courtroom or to file a settlement or whatever, you know, is decided in these cases, the other downside is if the person doesn't have the money to continue medical treatment, then that also looks, you know, that's appealing for the defendant in the case, because they're saying, oh, look, you delayed treatment. You didn't go get it. Why in the world would you not go get treatment without ever saying you didn't have the money to get it?
Or questioning, even if the person says, I haven't gone to that surgery, I'm hoping to use the money from this trial in this case to pay for the surgery. But of course, the defense of the insurance company is going to say, well, they didn't need it bad enough to go do it. If they'd have found a way to get the money, even if they had to sell their car and house and live, you know, pull their kids out of school or whatever, they'd have found the way if it was important enough to them.
Man, what an unfair thing it's for that to unfold that way.
Yeah, the catch 22. The good news is we do have juries and we do have good Tennesseans coming in, and nobody gives a really formula from a jury and says this is why we did what we did. But you got to think at some point, if a defendant or an insurance company, if somebody who's sued, it acts so heartless as to say, let them eat cake. You know, if they just say, we just don't care, they should have gotten the surgery if they really needed it. At some point, you're going to make a jury real mad, and they're not going to cut you any breaks on the other stuff that insurance company is trying to sell to them.
You know, what's wild to me, I've read different stories about different cases and whatnot, and some of them are just heartbreaking. You know, somebody, it's a basic slip and fall case, and let's say it leads to some kind of a medical procedure. Maybe you have to even have a leg amputated, whatever the case is. But so many of them are so sad, the outcome, because you have this person who's successful in life doing whatever it is they do. They're moving up in their career, and then this one injury, it completely shuts their life down, changes their life forever. Some people lose their jobs because they can't go back to work. I mean, it's sad what happens a lot of times in these, what look to be on the outside, a fairly small slip and fall.
Yeah, it's the sliding doors moment or the domino effect of an injury. And you mentioned slip and falls. You know, I've been doing this for pushing 25 years now. And though that's an area where I would have never imagined that walking along, I'm not even 6 foot tall, you know, but if I fall and hit my knee just wrong, and as you're describing, and if I go into surgery and then I have, every time you go to a doctor, especially with a surgery, you got to sign that chart that says, I agree, I could die, I could never wake up, I could have infections. There are things that happen despite the best medical care, infections especially, so that knee that needs a quick surgery that turns into an infection that turns into and snowballs until the person spending the last 40 years of their life with a cane. It's tragic. It's a tragic set of circumstances for somebody that was just going to go pick up a carton of milk at the store.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And sometimes it really is that simple.
Yeah. It's, you know, we see when you're dealing with an insurance claim or a lawsuit, the vast majority of the time, almost as a rule, any settlement or payment is going to be a one-time payment, meaning it includes everything that the person's dealt with until they get that check, as well as a check to include everything you're going to expect for the rest of their life, right?
Yeah.
So what that also means in talking about the time before they get paid and et cetera is, if you're looking in it saying, boy, we're talking about a surgery 6 months from now, most of the time you want to wait for that surgery to be done and make sure it went swimmingly and that everything recovered and there's no limp or anything afterwards. So it does mean a person sitting around saying, I've got all these bills mounting up, I've got all these problems, and I don't want to close the case out and just hope. The victim doesn't want to just be the one to hope and say, I'm sure everything will be just fine afterwards.
Yeah. Hey, and then you have those cases that you've got a disability for life from then on, and you got to, I guess, figure that up in deciding, you know, you're going to need this much money for the next 30 years.
Yeah, it gets to be honestly really, really challenging, because the way the law says it is what's likely to happen, not just what could happen. You know, if I stub my toe right now, I theoretically, I guess I could get arthritis on it, but it's probably not going to happen if I just stub my toe on a door on the way walking out of here. But it could happen, and the law says you can't get money for what might, you know, has an outside chance.
Yeah.
So you got to get the doctors in. You got to figure out what's this person actually looking at, and we'll get doctors together, even get a second opinion, a doctor to give to analyze the patient, take a look at their records, meet with them, and say what are they actually going to need, as well as what would help. One of the things I often look at in cases is not just what's the bare minimum when you're talking about somebody that's disabled.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody's got an amputation injury, for example, they've lost their arm. Well, that's a life-changing. Of course, that is a life-changing event, right? And if it was caused by someone doing wrong, a drunk driver, what have you, that drunk driver should not be paying the bare minimum to say, well, this is enough care to keep the victim alive.
Mm-hmm.
They should also cover for the mental health parts. And I recall one case where the victim was a fisherman. That was their biggest hobby. They just loved fishing. And they lost a limb, lost an arm. Using a fishing pole with one arm, it's a challenge.
Yeah.
So one of the doctors came in and said, look, there's a specialized fishing pole you can use specifically for this. And some of this, it doesn't cost that much in the grand scheme of things, but give them another couple $100 to buy a specialized fishing pole so that their weekends, that they're not just miserable sitting on the couch. Yeah. You know,
it would be tough no matter what the situation looked like. I mean, then you're going to have, an expert doctor on your side talk about, well, you know, this is what this patient can probably expect in the future. And then on the flip side of that, I'm sure the insurance company has their own doctor to come in and say, well, no, that's not what I see. And I guess, what is it, an independent medical exam, they call it?
Yeah.
And what's going to happen in those situations where the insurance company says, well, we want to examine your patient to see what's really going on here?
Generally speaking, the insurance company has the absolute right. I say absolute. In almost every case, the insurance company can send that person's medical records out for a second opinion from a doctor of the insurance company's choice, and they can send the person in to be examined by that other doctor. I say in almost every case, there's exceptions to the rule, but those exceptions are few and far between. But generally speaking, the judge is going to say, if you're wanting these folks, this insurance company or other person, to pay this money, then they get the right not to just take your word for it, but to have their own doctor take a look. Then both doctors come in, one for the patient, one for the insurance company. They explain it to the judge and jury, and the judge and jury decide. And, you know, juries, that's just people.
Mm-hmm.
When we get together and we look at it, they usually come up with the right result. They might not say, you know, we don't think you need all of this stuff that the patient thinks they need, but boy, you need a whole lot more than what this insurance company wants to pay for.
The insurance company's doctor, you know, they may not be specifically under their payroll, but yet they're contracted with that insurance company to do this exam. How impartial are they when doing the exam of the person who's injured?
It's a great question. I think it probably depends on the doctor. There are some doctors, just like there are mechanics, just like they're a lawyer, just about anybody in any field, you can find somebody who always says no. Remember the Mikey Life cereal commercial?
Yeah.
You know, there's some folks who just, you send them the records, you don't need to wait for them to open the envelope. That doctor has never seen a person who's been hurt in a car accident. Just, it cannot happen in the history of man. right? Yeah, yeah. So they know the answer before it even opens up. And then there are some folks, of course, who I think are in their doctors, lawyers, et cetera, in some fields, who are a little more willing to bend their feelings for a paycheck, right? And we've all met folks like that. And then there are some who are, I'd say the majority of folks, majority of specialists, doctors, and et cetera, are just trying to do the right thing. And let's focus on the ones that are just trying to do the right thing.
Sure.
If the insurance company sends it along to a doctor and says, we want your honest opinion, and that doctor gives an honest opinion back and says, I've looked at this and that person's really hurt and you need to pay him, under the law, the insurance company just never mentions it. That's it. They don't bring them into court.
Yeah.
Nobody ever hears about it. So they get the chance to get a second opinion without it being used against them in a court of law.
So how often do you have where, you know, the person you're representing, their doctor is the medical expert who you call to give that expert witness information, you know, that, to say, hey, look, this person is not only my patient, but this is what I've seen time and time over again in those who get hurt in this way.
Where it's the actual, the doctor who performed the surgery, what have you, I don't know the percentages. If I had to guess on behalf of the patient in recent years, I'd say it's maybe 50-50, maybe a little bit less. It, as much as anything, it's a matter there of, will the doctor make themselves available?
Yeah.
Theoretically, you can force the doctor to come in and testify for the patient. I say for the patient can force their doctor to come in and testify, right? But honestly, why would you do that if the doctor won't take your phone call? If the doctor don't want to talk to lawyers enough to take the phone call even or anything and tell you this is what my thoughts are, then you're going to roll the dice and just see if they come in and say, I just hate lawyers. Yeah. I hate insurance companies. I hate court cases. And I'm not saying any, I don't have any opinion whatsoever. The fact of the matter is, we were talking about who pays for all these costs of a lawsuit, interest and things, and you got to pay the doctor for their time. So I don't want to pay the doctor. I don't want my client, the patient, to pay the doctor to find out the doctor says, I actually don't know. I've never seen anything like this before. I don't want to pay them $1,000 to have them come in and sit in a conference room or in front of a jury and say, that's an excellent question, Mr. Bass. I don't know the answer to it. So I'd say it's 50-50 as to whether we talk to the original doctor or whether they say they won't take the calls or otherwise try to avoid. And then we get a second opinion from somebody.
And then, you know, leading up to a trial, you've got all these depositions that take place where you're asking questions to the other side, you know, whatever company caused the injury. Then I guess they're asking questions to your client. They're asking questions to their doctors in some cases.
Yes. And a deposition is really just a formal interview. There are rules around it, but those rules are basically nobody gets to insult or invade the privacy of the witness, and nobody gets to try to put words in the witness's mouth. You can't ask questions without an actual fact to support it. The lawyer can't say stuff like, now when you were cheating in this case and just making stuff up, lawyer can't just start testifying.
Yeah.
So, but it's otherwise it's a formal interview. The lawyer's getting to find out what that witness might say later at trial, or if for some reason the witness isn't going to be available at trial, they're out of the country or in poor health and might not make it to trial, then you record the formal interview and you play that at trial. So by the time of trial, the good news is whether it's a doctor or somebody who's hurt in the lawsuit, everybody involved, everybody, all the lawyers and the people in the case get to know what everybody's going to say before you walk into the courtroom. The good news about that in part is when we have a trial, we bring in folks to serve on the jury, and usually about 12 people have to come in and take a week off work or what have you, however much time. Once the insurance company and the victim and everybody sees whatever all these depositions,
mm-hmm.
they see what everybody in the case has to say, they should have a pretty good guess at how a jury or a judge or people generally will react to the case and what they should do about it, you know? So most cases end up settling for that reason. If you don't know the answers before filing suit, in the year or two between filing suit and going to trial, you sure know the answers then.
And these are all normal things that happen, I guess, along the route of a slip and fall type injury and then lawsuit that follows.
Yes, it's the depositions is absolutely normal. You also ask each other written questions. The patient says, I want copies of any of my medical records you've gotten from any source whatsoever. The insurance company writes, the patient says, we want a list of all of your doctors so we can go back and figure out whether you had this problem before or whether it was brewing already before you had the injury. And really, the real good news is the cards get on the table in most cases. We have trials because even with the cards on the table, people can sit around and debate and say, I just don't think your case is as good as you think it is.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody's going to believe you about this, that, or the other thing. Your entire case depends on you as the only person saying you had a green light. And I don't think you could have had a green light. So we still have trials over stuff, but by then we know exactly who's going to say what color that light was.
Attorney Brandon Bass with us today with JohnDayLegal.com, the law firm of John Day. And do you have some situations during deposition where the defendant's attorneys deliberately try to make your client upset or angry, or they mock them in some way in order to rile them up to get further answers that maybe they normally wouldn't have given?
I don't see the mocking thing in my practice as a specific example. You know, we're representing folks who are hurt, and we get a whole lot of calls. We talk to folks, we find out what we can do, and when we're representing people, they've got real injuries. The vast majority of the time, the lawyers on the other side know that from our office.
Yeah.
They know we're bringing somebody in and they've got a real loss here. So I don't see them mocking. Usually they're honestly empathetic.
Of course, mocking wouldn't look very good because you could play that back before the jury.
That's what I was going to say. So part of it is they're human beings. These lawyers are human beings. Second of all is I would take advantage of it if I saw somebody sitting there, and you're talking about someone who's now walking with a limp or they've lost a loved one or something like that, and they're going to, if that lawyer treats them like absolute, you know what?
Yeah.
We're going to play that formal interview video at trial and say, look, they're going to come in, this insurance company is going to come in and talk to you about how they feel so bad and how, let's talk about how they actually treat people.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of just human empathy, but there's also strategy there. On the flip side of that, though, you also talked about riling them up and things.
Yeah.
And it is, I absolutely watch a lot of lawyers for insurance companies try to get under the skin of the victim, try to get them to poke and prod at something that they might be uncomfortable with to see if the victim will react in a way that makes the victim look crazy.
Yeah.
You know, try to gaslight the victim, that makes the victim look unreliable. Try to get them, you know, well, are you sure your third grade teacher's name was Miss Dorothy? You know, just ask irrelevant things and try and get them to say, well, if you can't remember what the spelling words were for your seventh grade English class, how can we really trust you about what happened in this car accident, right? So I see provoking that way. I just don't see mocking, and I really do see a whole lot of trying to confuse the person. A big thing that I see from insurance lawyers is if you've been to the doctor enough times for an injury, you might have thousands upon thousands of pages, right? And you might have seen, boy, if you've anybody who's had a knee injury, for example, or had to go to physical therapy and stuff, you might have talked to a dozen or more different doctors and therapists and nurses. And I see insurance lawyers try to find one note that somebody wrote that might call it into question to say, well, this says right here that in March, on this one day, you told this one person that you weren't hurting that day, right? And how do we know you're really hurting and weren't making it up the next day?
Yeah.
Now, it doesn't matter whether the patient, whether that was the day after they had their leg amputated. The lawyer's still looking for, is there one medical record that the patient didn't write, never seen, didn't have anything to do with? And whatever nurse or therapist or whoever wrote it might not have cared. I mean, put it this way, I've definitely made a typo or two.
Yeah.
So if they hit zero and they meant to put the 9 button right next to it, to put 0 out of 10 pain instead of 9 out of 10, there's no telling But I see a whole lot of that, of trying to make people feel bad that some random medical record from years ago on one day sounds like they weren't hurting, no matter how obviously they must have been.
You know, I could even see that happening in a case where you're, after you get hurt, you're in that process of trying to get a proper diagnosis, trying to figure out exactly what's going on and how to fix it. And you may see three doctors, get different opinions and everything before picking the doctor you're going to go with. So I could see some of those visits, maybe it's just one random visit with one doctor and the lawyer on the other side gets the information from that visit and they say, well, that's the doctor I'm going to depose right there. That one who only saw the patient once, but yet you've seen your own doctor you went with 30 times. But this one doctor, only talked to him once. I'm going to use that doctor.
As the insurance lawyer, I'm only going to use the paperwork from that doctor. I'm not going to ask him questions because I don't want to find out the answer is. I've heard a doctor one time, for example, get grilled questions by an insurance lawyer about how his records said that this patient was a smoker or something. I can't remember what it was. And the doctor came in and said, that's from our computer system. I didn't even know that screen existed. We don't fill that in. That's just the default.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't click over to this tab, this is all the information. So they don't want to ask that question necessarily. It does get to be unfortunate watching people argue over those things. And I'll tell you, from the patient side, for folks who are hurt in car accidents or otherwise, the advice I give my clients is it's natural for us when we got multiple things going on. I got three or four things that are hurting. I'm going to be talking to the doctor about this is the one that's bothering me.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, it's my neck that's hurting so badly. I can't get out of bed in the morning and stuff. My knee may be bothering me just a little bit, so I'm not even going to mention that, but we got to get my neck better.
Yeah.
But if you're in a potential lawsuit or insurance claim, I tell folks, mention everything, because what the insurance lawyer will come in later and say is, well, you were going to this doctor for your neck. You went for 2 straight months. All you were talking about was your neck, and you didn't mention your knee until after the neck was better. And they'll argue to a jury, doesn't that mean that the knee probably wasn't hurt originally? When the reality is, no, it doesn't mean that. It just means the patient was worried most and foremost about this one big problem. So I tell folks, mention everything all the time, even if it's otherwise, even if you'd otherwise just take Tylenol for it and go about your day. Because if it does turn out to need more help, more medical treatment down the road than you expected, you don't want that insurance lawyer coming in front of a bunch of people, in front of a jury, and saying, I bet you had a wholly different accident you haven't told us about 6 months later, and that's why you suddenly switched from this neck injury, as my example, to suddenly now you got a knee injury you also want the doctor to look at.
You know, I could see in a case where somebody, let's say they break a hip. That sounds painful to me.
Oh, yeah, it's got to be.
So let's say they break a hip, but yet, you know, they get treatment, or maybe they get treatment 3 months down the road because they can't afford it right then, but they get treatment. But during things like depositions, I could imagine the lawyer for the defendant asking certain questions, but not being entirely specific, just to paint a picture like, well, he broke his hip, he can't walk anymore, but yet they get a picture of him walking and it looks like he's walking into a grocery store. But yet this poor guy over here who broke his hip, he never said he couldn't walk. He just said he's in extreme pain because of the broken hip.
Yeah, and it's a bit of lawyer games.
Yeah.
People want to say stuff like, yeah, you can't, they try to get the victim to say, I can't walk. Well, there's a difference between truly functionally not being able to walk, not being able to stand up, and it hurting like the Dickens to walk to the kitchen. You know, yeah. There's plenty of, I can't, when we just sit around and talk, when we say I can't walk, what we're saying is, I don't want to in part at time. It's just hurt. I mean, I'm stuck on the couch watching reruns on Netflix because I do not, it hurts to do these things. And it's twisting words to suggest that that means that the person is physically unable to. At the same time, as I often talk to people, look, you remember the old Incredible Hulk TV show?
Yeah.
Where they show at the beginning parents and stuff, and the adrenaline. I just remember the adrenaline and parents like lifting cars up and stuff with enough, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I said, listen, I'm in my 40s. I was never a track star, but I'm sure not one now. But that said, if this building caught on fire and my kid was on was downstairs,
yeah,
I'll do a 4340. You watch it, right? There are things that we will do in extreme situations. We will fight through stuff. So it's silly, but these insurance lawyers will try to take advantage and say that when they said they can't, they were lying to you. When in reality, no, they say they can't because it's something that they're not willing to deal with the amount of pain, or that the patient is, even if they're willing to do it, they can't do it the way they did before. If you've ever known somebody with a neck or arm injury, one of the things that hurts really bad for folks is putting a seatbelt on because you got to reach across and strap it over. As silly as that is, but the seatbelt motion is just across the body, so there's a lot of bending.
Yeah. Right?
Doesn't mean that they can't ride in a car, but man, maybe you don't go to the grocery store maybe you wait a little bit until you need a little bit more.
Sure.
Because it's just not worth it. Those sorts of games are, it's sad that any people get treated that way, especially somebody who's hurting. And hopefully, and I think most of the time, juries can see through that.
And I guess it's your role to then paint the picture to the jury of saying, this guy is in pain 24/7. I mean, he can fake a smile for 30 minutes to go take that family picture that his wife wants so bad. But after that, you know, and pain wears you out in general.
Yeah.
You know, so how do you get that across to the jury?
Well, you asked a great question earlier about talking with the patient's doctor versus talking with the second opinion doctor in a case and those depositions. I recall years ago a doctor who put it extremely well for one of my clients. And the patient was just lucky enough to have this doctor who was very articulate and eloquent. And the patient was dealing with pain all the time, just pain all the time. But what the doctor was getting asked questions about, couldn't the patient go back to work? I mean, he's functionally, he can stand up, right? Like we're talking about, he might be able to do it for a little bit. And the doctor put it really well. He said, I will tell you, I could get this man doped up on medication and he could probably make it through a week or two without a problem. But within 2 or 3 weeks, the consequences of the pain exhausting them at the end of the day, and the side effects and addictive properties of all that pain medicine just nonstop, he's not going to make it weeks, and he's certainly not going to make it months and years down the road. I thought that was an excellent way that doctor put it, that, yeah, we can get through a little bit.
Sure.
You know, that we can get through a little bit, but that doesn't mean we can get through it in a livable fashion, you know?
Yeah.
Or that there's not consequence overall. I mean, the fact is, if you're, or if someone's, anybody who's had an injury that messed with them for a little while and has to go to work, you come in from the end of the day, and by the end, you're wiped out, it hurts. You're certainly not the family member to your spouse, your kids that you want to be. And you're not doing extra things that you would order, I'd say extra. You're not helping with the dishes. You're not cleaning things up. You're not doing housework. It's wiping out your extras. So just because you can make it through the workday without getting fired doesn't mean your life is the same.
Yeah.
You know? And so the insurance folks, the law says the insurance company can be responsible for that change in the person's life, even if the person can make it, even if they can get by. So the difference in quality of life matters to me and hopefully to most folks.
Makes sense. Again, attorney Brandon Bass with us this morning. We're going to take a short break and then we will be right back.
This is Amanda from Animal City. We're at 919 Northwest Broad Street. We have not forgotten about our reptile lovers either. Here at Animal City, we have a great selection of products for our cold-blooded friends too. Here at Animal City, we have a full range of habitats, substrates, and other accessories. We have a great selection of products for our reptile lovers. We are so proud to be Murfreesboro's pet destination for 35 years. Animal City, 919 Northwest Broad Street, family owned and operated.
Hi, this is Tina Fox at the Rutherford Farmers Co-op. Please come see us for all your fall gardening and home needs. We have everything you need to make that yard look beautiful, whether it be grass seed, fertilizer, or anything to decorate that yard. We have everything you need to make your lawn beautiful. The Co-op Farm and Home Center is located at 985 Middle Tennessee Boulevard, just off of South Church. Weekend shoppers were open from 7 to 2 on Saturdays. And remember, you don't have to be a member to shop with us.
Good morning. It remains slower than normal over here through the Donaldson area, all from an overside load problem. It's been out here for several hours. 40 westbound, just past Spence Lane. You're able to get by it, but everybody's just creeping along up through there, causing more delays as you come past the airport there in Hermitage Donaldson on 40 westbound near Spence Lane. It's still sluggish. 65 southbound here at Trinity Lane. Prince's Hot Chicken karaoke tonight at the Tanger location. Be sure to order online throughout the day, princesshotchicken.com. I'm Commander Chuck with your on-time traffic.
Join me, Speedy Adler, and Greg for the Rick Burgess Show on WGNS.
The Rick Burgess Show, weekdays 11 to 2 on News Radio WGNS.
We'll see mostly sunny skies here this afternoon with a high around 90 degrees. Tonight, partly cloudy and a low near 61. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki from the WGNS Rutherford Weather Center.
Currently, it's 66.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
Brandon Bass is with us in studio today, attorney for the John Day Law Firm. And I'm curious, we're talking about all these steps that lead up to the trial date. And then the question is, how often does it actually go to trial?
I think percentage-wise, the numbers I've seen in my experience is we're talking single-digit percentage.
Okay.
If you include cases that never get filed, in other words, somebody gets hurt, they contact the right insurance companies, their lawyer goes through, and there's a lot of insurance companies get involved more than you think. So the lawyer does all the right things, moves things very efficiently, gets everything together. There's a good percentage of cases where the person's healed up enough to settle a case without ever filing a lawsuit. And then of the lawsuits, the percentage is like 5 to 10% of cases that get filed end up in trial. I think maybe lower than that now. So it's really, really rare at this point. By the time of trial, for a case to go to trial, a few things had to have happened. Number one is the patient filed a lawsuit. I mean, and they didn't get it, wasn't done to their satisfaction already, whether that's because the information wasn't there or because people were playing hardball.
Mm-hmm.
Number two is the insurance company gets about two or three chances, depending on the case, to get the judge to throw the case out of court before bringing a jury in, where the insurance company can come in and say, look, this patient says they had a green light, but judge, here's photos from the intersection. It's red while they're going through with one of those red light cameras, right? Yeah. So they get two or three, the insurance company gets a few chances to say there's no reason to bring in any jury in. And then a third thing is, after all those depositions, all those interviews have occurred, everybody's got all the information they need. At that point, the insurance company won't agree to pay as much as the victim thinks the case is worth. And one of them's, they may be both wrong, or one of them's wrong, and then they're going to find out from a judge and jury later.
Yeah.
So the percentage where they couldn't strike a deal with all the facts on the table and the insurance company couldn't find evidence to say there is no reason to waste anybody's time with this case is real, real small at this point.
Hey, I know we only have 2 minutes left, but you've got, I guess, those rare catastrophic injury cases where somebody is going to be in horrible pain the rest of their life. They're going to need surgeries the rest of their life, etc. Are those the ones that typically end up in the courtroom where you have the other side arguing, well, we just don't see it that way. Our doctor says they're only going to need one more procedure.
I'd say no. No, those are not the ones that typically end up. That's going to be a relatively small percentage of cases overall. Look, most folks that get in a car accident or things, the good news is they'll recover.
Yeah.
So you're talking about a percentage. If I had to guess, I don't have statistics to back this up, about the same percentage of people hurt in an accident that have a catastrophic or devastating injury, that's the same percentage that end up in trial for it. Which means the vast majority of trials are not the ones where people are devastatingly injured. those cases do go to trial. I've tried a number of those myself. It's just that it's still the same set of circumstances. By the point that it's going to trial, everybody's been able to talk to the doctors. They've been able to talk to each other. They know what everyone's going to say in front of that jury. And they either just don't agree about what the truth is, or they don't agree about what the truth is worth.
Yeah. Again, Brandon Bass with us today, and you can get your contact information, I guess, johndaylegal.com.
Yep.
Find all the details there.
That's it. Thanks, Scott.
Thank you for joining us.